It's time now for the Right Foot Business with your host, Nick Herleman, CPA. This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and is not a substitute for obtaining qualified professional advice in your own locality. You should not act on the information provided without seeking the services of your own accountant, financial advisor, attorney, or other qualified professional. No client relationship is created between the listener and any of the hosts or guests of this program unless they are formally retained in writing. This is an opinion-based talk show.
Nick Herleman here, back with Right Foot Business. You want to get a hold of us on the show, you got questions at rightfootbusiness.com. You can sign up for our email address at rightfootbusiness.com. That way you can get on our blogs, get our emails, regular updates. That way you're in tune with us. And also, you know, that way you can request shows, you know, different ideas, things like that. So we're going to have today we're going to do an episode on business structures, you know, kind of LLCs versus assumed business names, sole proprietorships, partnerships, you know, C-Corps, all these things. And I thought the best guess would be, you know, to have a local business attorney who kind of sees this day in and day out. And so I'd like to welcome Drew Gramson.
Thanks, Nick. You know, like you and probably a lot of your listeners, you know, I grew up in a small town here on the Oregon coast, and a big part of what I do is working with small businesses, so I do see a lot of these issues. You know, I kind of split my work life between Portland and Scappoose, so I think I have a perspective from kind of the big city and the small town aspect of it, but I think my favorite thing that I do is help people get started and watch those businesses grow over time.
Yeah. And you get to see the other end of it sometimes too, which might not be so good if they didn't necessarily set it up right or things like that too.
You see quite a few cautionary tales come through the office when maybe people didn't do what we wish they had done at the beginning.
Yeah, and that goes back, I mean, even in my original episode, we talked a lot about, you know, get those trusted advisors, find your local, you know, attorney, CPA, you know, financial banker, things like that, so that you can get that local advice. You can get those things, get off on the right foot. You know, that way it's not, you don't come down the line, you know, 10 years later, you're super successful and you're running into an issue, pulling in the attorneys at that point. You know, you might have made some bad steps and that might, you know, cost you a lot of money, you know.
You know, sometimes it's never fun to have to spend a little bit of money at the beginning, but I always tell people it's always cheaper to do it right the first time than to fix it down the road. And, you know, if we can help people avoid that, I'm all for it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's definitely, I always joke in the office, you know, the attorneys are the ones that make the money because usually the people wait till the end and then it takes a lot of attorney time to get there. And that costs a lot of money, you know. We all got to get paid for our time, you know.
Unfortunately, that's true. But, you know, I think you said something a minute ago that's very important and kind of dovetails with advice that I give clients all the time. And that's, you know, have your team together at the beginning. I think the best thing that you can do is to have a relationship with, you know, an accountant, an insurance person, you know, somebody in banking or lending. You know, that really makes sure that you have a solid foundation from the get-go when you're starting a business.
Well, because a lot of times what I see, some of those professionals will, they'll push you, they'll say, hey, did you think about this when you, you know, the banker might say, you need this kind of insurance for that, you know, and so then you're back to the insurance agent going, hey, I also need some coverage here or things like that. So they bounce off of each other well too, once you've got, you know, once you've got some of those people in place. And it's not bad to interview multiple, kind of figure out what's a good fit. You know, those are relationships that you're going to carry for years in business. So it's, you know, important to find one that you want to work with, you know.
It's absolutely true. And, you know, what I find oftentimes is, and especially, you know, a place like this, a lot of those professionals also have working relationships with each other. And so, you know, you can get some synergy there when you have, you know, your members of your professional team that have that communication and working relationship, that really works to your benefit.
Yeah, and that's definitely, I mean, you see at our, you know, at our office, I mean, Drew and I have, you know, some clients that we have together, and that's, it's a great, you know, when you can work back and forth off a lot of that, that helps so much when you have good relationships amongst the professionals you're working with too. Just makes it easier. You understand what they need, what they're, you know, looking for when we're crossing the different legal paths, I guess is what we're on to. So.
Well, it really does make it easier if I can pick up the phone and make a, you know, 2-minute phone call over and say, hey, Nick, I've got a tax question for a client of mine, and you know what I'm talking about.
Yep.
You know, I think that benefits our clients on both ends.
Yeah, and usually if it's a nice softball, we feel, you know, we get a little confidence boost for the day, and that's always fun, right?
Absolutely. We need those once in a while.
Well, so I think today, you know, we'll jump into the show a little bit. The, you know, like I said about business structures and things, and just a quick reminder, you know, questions at rightfitbusiness.com if you want to get your questions in. That way we can, you know, have some follow-up shows on this kind of area. But, I mean, we'll dive into some of the legalities here and tax, you know, legalities of it all too. You know, but the first one that, you know, most people, when they have a little side business or, you know, they're doing something, you know, outside their day job, they start out as kind of a sole proprietor. You know, they may even just work, you know, do the business under their name. They might just be doing some consulting. They might be selling a little product, you know, some things at fairs. There's all these kind of things. But I mean, I think maybe we spend a little bit of time on what that actually means legally, you know, from what a sole proprietor is, but also, you know, we're going to jump into a few of the pitfalls there, you know, and then that'll launch us into some of the other areas too. So,
well, there are some pitfalls there.
Yeah. What are the pitfalls? Let's start there. Where can people slip up on that one?
We're starting with the fun stuff.
Yeah.
So when you're a sole proprietor, and I should say that if you don't know what kind of business you have and you haven't filled out any paperwork that says you're anything else, that's probably what you are. A sole proprietor is you, not necessarily on your own, but you are the business is you. And the biggest pitfall there is if something goes wrong, if somebody sues you or a creditor comes after you, they can come after everything you've got. There's no shield in between you and the business and you and the people that you might owe money to. So there are some serious risks. It's the easiest form of business to operate, but it's also the riskiest. So it's something for your listeners to keep in mind.
That's true. They always, we'll talk more about it later, but that shield is pretty darn important. And even in our office, you know, that's where I say, you know, do you have a business insurance person? You know, there's different components that feed into that shield that protects you. Because if you're, you know, I mean, probably, and Drew's probably seen some bad examples of this, but I mean, if you're, you know, something goes awry and you're negligent in some way, you know, with your business, and then they come after you, they can sue right through your business, but also your house, you know, I don't know how far they can go. Retirement accounts? I don't know. Like, you know, there's probably some spot where it stops, but
there are some exceptions, but that's probably getting beyond what we're talking here today. But yeah, you're absolutely right. There are very few limitations when you're operating as a sole proprietorship as to what folks can reach if something does go wrong. And there are tools that you can use to limit and protect that, you know, talking to a qualified insurance broker and having good coverage there. That's, you know, that's one thing that's important if it does make sense to operate as a sole proprietorship.
Yeah.
Having protection on the insurance side. Careful contracting is another thing that, you know, can be done to kind of limit liability when you're out there on your own. You know, we build that into our agreements to minimize risk. And frankly, a lot of people who are just starting out as sole proprietors, sometimes their best protection is just the fact that they're judgment proof. If you don't have anything to get, there's not much incentive for people to try to get it.
So you hear that here, folks. Just go in real poor and then and they got nothing to get after.
It's a proven strategy. Not necessarily one that we endorse, but it is effective.
No. No, and I think that, you know, that jumps into, you know, and we've seen some, you know, there's lots of cases out there where people don't, you know, they're in a, they may be even going with a buddy on something, you know, hey, let's go, you know, do this thing, or, you know, we could make these things together, or we could do some home mechanicking, or I don't know, you know, things like that. They have, you know, we're both good mechanics, you know, could we do some side shop work or whatever? And you know, that can be, you know, this kind of jumps into like a more of an informal, probably partnership, you know, not established, but a partnership of sorts. And I think it comes along, you know, I mean, tell me, you know, it comes along with similar risks, you know, as far as sole proprietorship, you know, there's, and the added risk of when you disagree with your partner or, you know, whatever in that case, right? So,
sure, you know, partnerships can work well in some situations. You have the benefit of somebody there to shoulder the load with you. You know, partnership, you can kind of think of it as like a business marriage. You know, you're in it together for, you know, for the good and the bad.
Yep.
But the risk there is that not only now are you on the hook for something you might do wrong, but generally speaking, you can end up on the hook for something that your partner does as well. And, you know, we get into the legalities of it. Either partner can act on behalf of the partnership. So I can go out, you know, if I'm your partner, I can go out and make a deal with somebody and obligate us to either do something or owe some money. And you're coming along with me because I've got authority as a partner and you're in it with me.
That so, don't take those partnerships lightly, I think,
no,
is kind of the bottom line.
Choose your partners carefully.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, I've seen successful ones, you know, from an accounting practice standpoint, and then I've seen the ones go bad.
There's some great businesses that are run that way, but, you know, go in with your eyes open. It comes back to, you know, get your foundation in order before you start. And if you do that, a partnership can work very well, but you need to be mindful of what those risks are and know that they are significant.
Yeah, and that just goes back to that, you know, most, like I usually say, a lot of professionals will have a free consult, you know, kind of get you in the door, see if you're going to be a good fit for, you know, both parties, but also you can ask some of these questions up front, you know, of the accountant and the attorneys, you know, just to, hey, I'm thinking about heading down this road, you know, and that they will caution you on a lot of these things, you know, right out of the gate. They've seen it enough, you know, in their profession to know where you can get in some trouble.
I think that's great advice, you know, either a free consultation, with which a lot of us in the legal field do offer, or, you know, reduce cost initial meeting, just to make sure that, you know where you're going and what you might need to do next.
Yeah. Well, so that reminds me too, you know, if you got questions, you know, send them in on our question line, questions@rightfootbusiness.com. That way, you know, maybe we hit some other topics. You're like, well, I'm in a partnership. What do I do now? You know, can I go the next level? And we'll talk about some of those in the next segment. So we should be back here in a little bit, and we'll continue on with business structure.
And now back to the Right Foot Business with your host, Nick Herleman, CPA.
And we're back here with Nick Herleman and myself and Drew Gramson, a local attorney here. We're talking about business structure, different formats, LLCs, all those kind of things that we get a lot of questions on, and trying to cover some of the areas that you might have to, you know, have some questions on. And one of the things we were talking about from the first segment was, you know, partnership versus sole proprietor. You know, there was, Drew made a good point in our break, you know, that there's some areas that you might be in a partnership before you even know it, you know? And so I think, how does that work actually?
So I've seen this happen, and where it comes up is, you know, as you mentioned in our first segment, somebody has a project that they want to work on, maybe with a buddy or somebody that they've done business with before. And that's all well and good, and everybody intends it to kind of be a one-off, but there are some circumstances to watch out for, because you might be a partner before you know it. And those things that can trigger a partnership, the first one is if you've both got a right to receive profits from the business, if you've agreed to that, you might be a partner. If there's some expression of intent, even if you didn't, you know, you weren't really thinking about it, if you've got an email that says, hey, you know, great being partners with you, well, you might have just made yourself partners.
Right.
And
that's, I actually even think back to maybe this is an example in a really loose sort of sense, but, you know, with some of our show affiliates and things like that, you know, where, you know, if they didn't have super strong affiliate agreements, but, you know, from our show, they click, you know, someone clicks a link and they sign up for like a payroll service or something like that. You know, if they're sharing revenue with me, you know, in some way, you know, outside of a formal agreement that I obviously signed before the affiliate agreement, then, you know, it's that kind of example. All of a sudden you're collecting money together and I'm getting a piece of that, you know.
Yeah, and I think you probably have enough factors working against a partnership there, but
for sure,
it's good to be aware of that. And, you know, one of the most important concepts, even though nobody likes to do this, is if you put the relationship in writing, it's a lot harder down the road to argue over what the relationship was supposed to be. So it's one of those things, like we talked about, get your business in order first and avoid that dispute down the road.
So, well, that's definitely, I mean, I think if we were to hammer any key term, I think, in all this, and we haven't even gotten to it too much yet, but it'd be operating agreements, you know. Absolutely.
Always put the relationship in writing. Yep. You know, nobody goes into a partnership or an LLC or any other kind of business arrangement thinking, you know, I can't wait to cheat this guy. But what does happen is, you know, I've got one idea about what something means and you have another, and we could both be coming at it, you know, honestly, but end up in a fierce disagreement because we saw it differently, even though we both had the best intentions. And so writing it down beforehand saves a lot of trouble later.
Yeah. Well, and actually something we were talking about a little bit earlier. Oh, is there more actually to add to that?
Well, just a little bit.
Sure.
You know, if there's shared control of the business or some kind of an agreement to share in either profit or losses or to contribute on some kind of an agreed schedule or basis, those are other factors that could push you into a partnership that you may not want.
Yeah.
So put it in writing first and you can avoid all these questions later.
Yeah, yeah, there's definitely different ways. And that, I was thinking back on the other part, the, you know, we're talking about sole proprietors and even partnerships and these, you know, truly in the sense of a partnership, but, you know, what is a doing business as or an assumed business name? You know, they call it assumed business name in our state, you know, but I think there's different terms out there for it. But, you know, how does that work from a legal, I mean, you know, standpoint?
Well, that's a great question. Most people would think of that as a DBA, but the state of Oregon does use the ABN or assumed business name. Yeah. But it's something that's very important when you're operating, you know, either as a sole proprietorship or a partnership, especially because you don't have any other name but your own. So let's say for you, for example, if you don't want to just operate as Nick Herleman, some guy, you want a business name, you're allowed to go to the state's Secretary of State's office online and register a name that you can use in place of your own.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be a formal company name, but you know, if you wanted to have, you know, Nick's Accounting Warehouse,
could
register that, put it on the sign, put it on your checks. You're allowed to do that. But it has to be registered. It has to be a public record. And you know, there's some rules about, you know, not being able to jump on a name that somebody down the street is already using, confusing customers, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's a way to do business under a name that isn't your own.
Yeah. And that's, you know, where I think it comes up a lot at our office is the, you know, they want to have some fun branding or they want to do some of these things. So they might have a you know, their personal name, or they may have just, you know, their LLC name even, or their corporate name. But then they may have some fun branding, you know, things. I mean, Nick's Accounting Warehouse seems like fun, you know. It's got a warehouse of accountants just going to town over there. But
that's how it works, isn't it?
Pretty much, sadly. But no, the, you know, but then they can have some kind of fun branding, right? And they can, you know, go do graphic design and have, you know, nice logos that look great on their trucks or, you know, whatever
kind of
business they have or on billboards. And that just, yeah, they can have a little bit of fun with that. And that, you know, we'll probably talk about a little bit more later, but the, you know, you can, the LLCs and the S-Corps and those things, and you know, I might be blending some of this, but usually can own that too, you know, directly.
Yes.
As a, you know, it doesn't even have to come from you personally necessarily.
Yeah, absolutely. It, you know, what's not uncommon is for one business to have multiple branches. You know, you might, you know, you might do a few different things under the umbrella of one business, and maybe you want to be able to operate with a different name for each of those, and so that's, you know, that's a good way to do it without having to open up another company each time you want to do something that's a little bit different than what your core business might be.
Yeah, and I see that. I mean, even just locally here in Columbia County, we have people who, you know, have different ventures going and they, you know, they want to have a little bit of branding for this. It might still go under their core umbrella of a corporation, you know, Nick's you know, investments or something like that. And then they, you know, but under that, they might have some rentals going. They might have some other, you know, they might have a yard maintenance service or, you know, I don't know, just different things that they, that are kind of similar, but they want to have some different branding for those. And that it all feeds up from a tax return standpoint, I guess is what we care about at the end of the day, but you know, it all feeds into the same entity.
Yeah. And there are sometimes you may want to have a separate entity for those things, but other times it just doesn't make sense to, you know, to go that far. But
that's an extreme example there for sure. And you might not want to do that.
If you're doing yard maintenance and accounting under the same business entity,
we need to stop right now, guys.
I'd love to have a conversation with you about that.
Oh, my attorney's after me. No yard maintenance, none of that. Just trying to use some wild examples for sure. And it is, but you know, you see it sometimes. People, I mean, there are definitely, I talked about a little bit earlier, you know, there's some business owners locally that have been very successful. You know, they got a lot of different ventures going, you know, and setting those up to protect from each other comes up to be a question, you know, but also the branding, you know, we're talking about that part right now, but I mean, there's some legal reasons to keep them all, you know, separate in some ways. So,
you know, Nick, I have kind of talked about what the advantages and disadvantages of these sole proprietorships and partnerships are from a legal standpoint, but I think people would want to hear a little bit about how the taxation end of that works.
Yeah, definitely. And that's kind of our wheelhouse, you know. And actually, if you have other questions, you know, send them in on the question line, questions@rightfitbusiness.com. But, you know, some of the tax topics within all of that, you know, the sole proprietor and general partnership areas, you're looking at so much, you know, when you start, you know, I usually tell people, you know, if you're in the tax bracket of the 22% tax bracket, you know, in the federal one, at the federal level, and then you add 15% for the self-employment, you know, you're already at 37%. And then here locally in Oregon, you know, we have, you know, most people cap out around 9%, and that's kind of standard. It happens pretty early for a lot of people. I mean, now you're already talking about 46% of your earning, you know, of your profit. You know, it still comes down to, you know, your bottom line, but I mean, that's almost half of what you brought in the door in a lot of cases. And in one of the segments I was talking about, you know, what we're seeing a lot of too is consultants. You know, they might work from their home office. They might do, you know, they've got a laptop and a home office set up, you know, so they don't have a whole lot of overhead for like a traditional business would. And so, you know, they don't have a whole lot of write-offs to get in there. They might have some mileage and they might have some home office and they might have a few of those things. But at the end of the day, you know, almost all of what's coming in the door, you know, they might have a consulting agreement for $80 or $100 an hour, and they're just making that money. And then they're going to need to save about half of that money to pay the tax man. So in these sole proprietor general partnership areas, that's a guarantee. That's how that's going to work. You know, there are some other scenarios to get around that, but you know, in most cases, that's how it works. And you're going to pay, you know, close to 50% in taxes. You know, different states is different, you know, of course, but and depending on different things you buy along the way, but there's a lot of strategies to get around that, and we'll talk more about that in other episodes, but just from a true like dollars in the door, you know, as a sole proprietor or a general partnership, you're looking at some pretty high tax rates for people.
You know, one of the reasons often that people will use one of these structures is there's less paperwork required. How does that translate to the tax side?
That's true. I mean, most times that ends up being, if it's a sole proprietor on just a Schedule C, you know, they'll bring in, you know, their profit and loss, you know, hey, I got this many dollars in the door and had these couple of expenses in total, and here it is, and you know, and I've got receipts at home to prove all that, you know, and so, you know, a lot of times that's kind of where it just makes it easy, right? They bring in where they're at, and here's what they did, and their mileage logs and things like that, and you're good to go. So yeah, paperwork wise, and then they're not filing with the state each year. You know, there's just lots of little components they don't have to do, right?
And there's just that one layer of taxation, right?
Yep. It's on their personal tax return. They don't have to do any more than that. So anyway, that kind of brings some questions. Go ahead and send those in, questions@rightfootbusiness.com. And then also, you know, that's that segment. We'll be back in a few with some more business structure talk.
And now back to the Right Foot Business with your host, Nick Herleman, CPA.
Hey, we're back here with Nick Herleman, myself, and Drew Gramson, an attorney. We are covering business structure, you know, and if you have questions on that, shoot them in on our question email address, questions@rightfootbusiness.com. We were just kind of finishing up partnerships, assumed business names, sole proprietors, you know, and now we're going to kind of dive into some of the other areas where, you know, LLCs is kind of the next step, you know, a lot of people talk about, and that's usually one of the first questions I get in the office. So I think, you know, we'll jump into some of that, what that actually means and why to go down that road. So I think getting a little bit of background, you know, Drew might be able to help us a little bit with, you know, how does the LLC get us some extra shield, you know, a little extra protection, you know, people generally understand that, but, you know, give us a little more background, I guess, so we understand.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the biggest reason that people are interested in setting up an LLC is right in the name. And as you know, that stands for Limited Liability Company.
Yeah, we got to go back to basics.
The keywords there are limited liability. So an LLC is an entity that exists separately from the people who set it up. As long as you follow the rules and do it right,
yep.
It's its own bucket. And if you follow the rules, if something goes wrong, the only thing that anybody on the outside can come after are the assets that you've put into that bucket. And so it serves to protect, you know, we talked about before, your house,
yeah.
Your bank accounts, the things that you own individually that aren't part of the business, you can keep those safe and limit your risk. So the biggest reason that people might want one of these is that legal protection.
Yeah, because you say, you know, like I think our podcast will resonate with a lot of people that are in corporate jobs, you know, wanting to get out on the right foot in business and do, you know, and have their own business. And so I think, you know, a lot of those people have established themselves in their corporate world, and they have, you know, they have assets, they have, you know, their house and their vehicles and things like that. So they do, and, you know, maybe decent sized bank accounts even, you know, but, you know, getting that shield of protection in there would be really important to a lot of those people. And, you know, maybe this would be a good spot too. You know, what are some of those things? You know, I mean, when I'm talking to clients, I talk a little bit about, you know, bank accounts and things like that and commingling funds, you know, but I mean, you know, what are some of those things? Maybe you can expand on that a little bit too. You know?
Well, that's critical. And it, you know, goes back, I think we start at the beginning with the documentation.
Yeah.
You know, first of all, to have an LLC and have it be valid, you know, you've got to register it with the state, and you file, you know, what are called articles of organization, and that gets you off and running. At that point, you need to put together something called an operating agreement. And I know this sounds complicated, but it's fairly straightforward as far as these things go. But that defines who is a part of the LLC, what the business is authorized to do, who has control, who gets to vote, how the money gets divided up. And then you follow those rules and you keep the business separate. So the biggest thing, and it's something that you mentioned, is, you know, don't commingle that money. When a check comes in for the business, don't put it in your own account. You know, if you need the money, put it in the business account and take it out either as, you know, a draw from the business or as part of your salary, which is something I think that we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
But, you know, don't pay business expenses from your own personal funds.
Right.
And, you know, we tell people over and over again, don't do this, but it happens a lot because it's so easy to do that. But once you get into the habits of keeping the business separate, it's easy to do. But by following those rules, you make sure that those assets are viewed by the courts and the law as separate and kept safe.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think you see, I mean, client-wise too, they're, well, I didn't have that debit card with me, and I didn't have, you know, some of those things, and you don't want to get caught up in that. I mean, that can be very dangerous when it comes down to that too. And I think actually revisiting a little bit of your comment about, you know, the earlier segment about, you know, we don't get into business trying to harm each other or any of these things, but, you know, back on that operating agreement, I mean, you're trying to, I mean, you know, correct me where I'm wrong, but, you know, you're trying to spell all that stuff out up front and doomsday it a little bit so that just in case something does go right, you know, life changes, you know.
It absolutely does. And if you can limit the potential for misunderstandings, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, when, you know, people change, things go wrong, maybe somebody was a little short on cash 1 month. How do these things work, and what do we do if things don't go according to plan? And having that all in writing is a big help.
Yeah, I could see that. Is there anything else, I mean, besides the commingling of funds and the operating agreement, are there other things that help protect that shield too? I honestly don't know.
Yeah, keeping good records, you know, the requirements are a little looser than they are for corporations, but, you know, having some kind of an annual, you know, an annual meeting, even though that's more of a corporate thing, but having some kind of a meeting with minutes and records to show what you've done and why, making sure that when you've taken business actions that you record the fact that that action was authorized by the members of the company, which, by the way, people who own an interest in an LLC are called members rather than shareholders.
Very good distinction. The IRS will correct you if you try and call them and not say who you are.
They certainly will. So, you know, we make sure that we use that kind of language. And, you know, I think it's important when it comes to the tax side, too, that, mm-hmm. you know, there are some regulations that are important, and I think we'll probably get to that later. But just making sure you dot all those I's and cross the T's, that that will prevent a court later on from deciding that that LLC was simply an alter ego that you were using to cheat or defraud or avoid liability unfairly. And so having the records in order is the best way to keep yourself safe.
Yeah.
Man, you make it sound really dangerous out there. I mean, should we be scared of these LLCs? I don't know. They're just trying to set it up and create a little shield for themselves. And no, most people are, you know, what we see in our business. I mean, most people are out to do the right thing, do the honest thing. And, you know, and sometimes that can go bad later in life.
I think the vast majority of people absolutely want to do the right thing. Sometimes they forget. We were talking during the break. I had a client not too long ago who was getting ready to buy some property through their LLC, and the bank calls and says, well, you know, we can't do this. There's no such business. And the client says, well, I set up an LLC like 20 years ago, and I pulled it up with the state, and sure enough, he had, and hadn't done anything with it since. It was dissolved by the state a year later and hadn't been on the books for a long time. So, you know, keeping up that registration with the state annually is also something that has to be done. And it's easy to forget, even though they'll send you a letter and send you a bill for the registration fee, which I think is all the way up to about $100 a year now. But keeping on top of those little things, you know, those can be more important than you think.
Pay your $100, get it registered. I mean, that's Oregon, you know, every state's different.
Every state's different.
And some are more or less, but, you know, keep those filed, keep those up to date. That's important. People go, why am I getting this tax thing? You know, sometimes when I get they get a letter about it. Well, it's just your renewal. All right, send that in with $100. Okay. You know,
generally speaking, I don't think LLCs are something that people should be afraid of. In fact, I think for most small businesses, they make the most sense. They're kind of a hybrid between a more complicated corporate form and a simpler partnership, but they tend to give you the benefits of both if they're used correctly. So most of the time, I recommend that clients set up that way.
Yeah, I think that's something that... You know, actually, I'll touch on the tax part of it for a second too. But I mean, when you're a single member LLC, you know, so you just wanted to get an LLC in place, and you're effectively a sole proprietor from the IRS's standpoint. You know, when it comes to your tax return, and that goes on, you know, just a Schedule C on your personal return, and you don't have to, you know, you're treated as it comes with very little paperwork as well, much like a sole proprietorship. So that's why, you know, we end up recommending as well, you know, you probably should at least set this up so you've got some protection for any level of business. And then when you go multi-member, I guess is what, you know, how we refer to it in tax land, you know, then you have a partnership tax return. It becomes a, you know, it's a separate entity at that level from the IRS's eyes too. And you do a partnership return, even though you're an LLC, and then you have each of the members get their share of the income, or, you know, that can go a lot of different ways as well. We won't jump into that. Right. But, you know, they get their share of the income that they then report on their personal tax return, so that they're, you know, counting all that income and paying taxes on it. 'Cause that's what we're doing here.
But you mentioned that an LLC can have one member or it can have multiple members. And, you know, a nice thing about an LLC is that the members are allowed within their operating agreement to decide how the profits and losses are going to be divvied up. And they're not tied to the same percentages or proportions that they used when they were putting money in. So
True.
That's something that you can't do with some of the more complicated corporate forms. So.
Yeah, and an example you've seen, and I've seen this in my practice, you may have an investor with a lot of money, you know, they're going in for an equity portion, but they're going to share equally because, you know, a younger guy that they're mentoring a little bit or something is going to do all the legwork. You know, they're going to be out there running around doing all these things, and they're contributing much more of their time, whereas the investor might be just checking in weekly or something like that, you know, and providing the capital, but they want to share equally in the revenue that comes out because, you know, that's you know, or not equally, you know, but, you know, they can skew that how they need to.
Well, Nick, what are the initial tax ramifications of a situation where one party puts in a lot of cash, the other party doesn't, maybe expecting to do labor, but they end up each with half of the company?
So that's it comes up more in the loss situation. So say they're losing money for the first couple of years, and, you know, they're kind of getting the business set up, getting, you know, customers set up, things like that. And what happens is, you know, the investor person who put all this equity in, they have much more shareholder capital or basis in these in the entity, and they can take losses up against all of that. So that member gets some tax advantage to that on their personal return. But the the younger person who, you know, maybe is helping with all the, you know, doing all the legwork and all those things, they didn't put any money in, you know, or maybe a few thousand dollars or something like that, they start to get limited what they can count as losses on their personal tax returns. So, you know, it gets, without getting too much into the details, you know, that there might be some advantages to one and not the other, you know. And so
sounds like that might be a good topic for another show.
Yeah, yeah, it might be its own show. But also, you know, talk to your advisor, figure that out. One thing, you know, you got questions on some of this stuff, you know, shoot, you know, call in or, you know, via email, questions@rightfootbusiness.com, and we'll take a little break and come back and revisit the final one final segment here.
And now back to the Right Foot Business with your host, Nick Herleman, CPA.
All right, we're back here with Nick Herleman, myself, and Drew Gramson, a local attorney. And we are covering kind of the final segment here of business structures and how to set up your business. And so one of the areas we were, first questions, you know, send in your questions at rightfootbusiness.com. That way we can maybe address in future shows some of your areas of concern. So, but one thing we were talking about during the break actually, you know, was kind of the next level, you know, beyond LLC. We covered LLCs and, you know, and very little, you know, not too much detail, you know, just the basics. But, you know, the next level that we usually think about from a tax standpoint and legal standpoint is an S corporation or a small, you know, small corporation. And that there's areas within that kind of go to the next level. And I know that actually jumps into more of my field, you know, tax areas. But, you know, from a legal standpoint, and Drew can kind of correct me on some of this stuff, you know, you can be an LLC, I think, right, and also convert to an S corp, but you can also be an Inc. and file go that route too. I guess maybe specify a little bit there.
Well, you can be an LLC and elect to be treated as an S corp, which I know is something that you were mentioning while we were off the air, and maybe, you know, your listeners might want to know what that process is and why you might do that.
Yeah, actually, there's. You know, and a lot of times this comes up when a business is starting smaller, they're an LLC, you know, like, hey, we should get some protection in place, you know, but there is some potential of that being that side business from your day job becoming your main business and all of that. So, you know, if you start as the LLC and all of a sudden the cash is rolling in, you're making all this money and you don't want to, we were joking, Uncle Sugar, you know, give it all to the government at the end of the day. There are some strategies that go along with this. And so they may file one form with the IRS that says, hey, we're growing big enough. We want to elect to be an S corp. These are going to be the, you know, the members of this, you know, the shareholders of, you know, from a tax standpoint of this S corp. And so now all of a sudden your LLC is being treated as a tax corp or an S corp in the IRS's eyes. That way there you can go through some of these, you know, tax advantages and things too. So,
if I have a client who's, say, a high-earning professional, is there a reason that they may want to elect that treatment at some point?
Yeah, so they, you know, we're... The court case, of course, is an accountant back in the day, you know, who tested the limits of all this. But what happens a lot of times, you know, people grow their business and, you know, all of a sudden they kind of get to these profit levels. And a lot of times locally, you know, I throw out like $60,000-$70,000 as a profit level that might make sense. And so, you know, say someone's profession might normally pay a salary of $50,000 and, you know, and they're making $70,000 now in their business, you know, so that's covering themselves. You know, we may elect them to move on to an S corp. So they would file that one form with the IRS. It's a form 2553, you know, not that we want to get really fun with forms here, but you know, you file that form and you know, that gets them into that S corp status. And some of the rules that come along with that, and this is probably where the accounting geek side comes in, but you know, they've got to then put themselves on a salary, you know, put themselves on payroll so that they can pay themselves. And we were joking about one of the terms I always throw out is called hog theory, you know, like there's going to be some tax advantages to some of this. And so, you know, if you give yourself a really low salary, you know, that's where you're getting hit for the most taxes. But if you give yourself, say, a $10,000 salary in this scenario, and then you take the rest the other way as a distribution out of your LLC, Well, you're avoiding a whole lot of taxes, and the IRS sure doesn't like that, and they call you a hog, I guess.
I don't know. And the reason that somebody would do that, and please don't do this, it would be to avoid the self-employment tax. Right. Is that right? Right.
Yeah, absolutely. In the S-Corp or the sole proprietor model, you're paying full self-employment on all those earnings that are coming in the door, all your profit, you're paying full self-employment tax. And that gets very costly. You know, we were talking 50% numbers, you know, and that when you start talking about backing down some of your tax load by that 15% of the self-employment part, that can be very cost effective, you know, and you know, there usually comes along with other services you got to do, like you got to do payroll and you got to do. Yeah. So a lot of times people, you know, you're paying for those extra services and there's, you know, you don't want to incur all that extra cost if you're not at a profit level that makes sense. So, you know, you got to file a partner, you know, an S-Corp return, you know, a lot of accountants charge a pretty high price for that. You know, that's a whole separate entity. Your books have got to be in balance. You know, your paperwork just comes up to another little bit of a level, even just to file the taxes. So, you know, it has to make financial sense. Even.
So it sounds like there are some trade-offs, but when you get to a certain point, it's worthwhile to do.
Yeah.
I think it ties back to what I like to tell my clients again, and I've mentioned this earlier, is have that team. So this is an issue where you want your attorney and your accountant to be on the same page to make sure that you're getting the benefit of the tax code in the most efficient way, while also managing your business in a way that's not going to overwhelm you with paperwork or headaches.
Well, and absolutely teaming up on that is great, because there's so many, I've seen many a situation, or, you know, sometimes people go the self-service route, they LegalZoom it, they, you know, there's a, you know, other online services for accounting as well, you know, and sometimes they go that route, but they, you know, they don't get all these facts in line. And that's where it is absolutely important to have that trusted advisor, because if they can talk amongst each other, here's the longer term plans, because the accountant might ask, what are you, you know, what kind of revenue are you looking at? Whereas the attorney might just say, what are you trying to protect? What are you trying to do there? You know, and marrying those up a little bit to understand, you know, what's the accountant going to recommend in 2 years, you know, can we make some decisions early on, you know, to make sure you're on the right foot there too.
Yeah. And I think when the accountant and the attorney and often the insurance broker, maybe even a financial mm-hmm. advisor, if there are some long-term goals in play, when those people can talk amongst each other and develop a plan that's tailor-made for you as the client, I think that's when you get the best of all worlds.
Yeah, I would agree. Well, and actually, so yeah, back to the, you know, most times in that cost effectiveness of it all, I tell people it's, you know, make sure that you're, that's why the profit level needs to be at a point and, you know, a couple factors in place, so that paying for some extra services, whether it be attorney or accounting, is still your net, you're still ahead as far as taxes when you're saving that 15% on the self-employment, you know, in a lot of those cases. I mean, in the, you know, if we take 15% of $20,000 in our example, you know, that's, you know, significant savings for someone. You know, $3,000 is enough usually to cover all, you know, a lot of those things.
Yeah. We're talking about real money that can be saved if things are done correctly. And while there is some upfront expense, usually I think it works out well to the good on the client side.
Yeah. And then you look at that as things you can invest in your business. You can better your business with those savings, or just be able to draw a little bit more out to you know, meet your personal goals. You know, you kind of mentioned financial advice, you know, but I mean, if part of that is putting more into retirement and things along the way, that's, which it absolutely should be, you know, that gives you a little extra cash for some of that too each year. So
it makes a lot of sense.
And so also, this might be a good point too. We're going to jump into our next segment on, within this group, about, you know, C-Corps. But, you know, before that, you know, if you got questions on S-Corps, you know, send in your questions at rightfootbusiness.com. That'll help us address them in some of those later ones, because there's a whole, you know, we were talking during the break, there's a whole bunch of different benefits and things like that. And
it is a deep
and how you incorporates, you know, the how you incorporate can also make for, you know, personal benefits, and as a business does a lot better, there can be some huge advantages there. And we don't have enough show for that. So we'll jump into a little bit, you know, we were talking a little bit about C-Corps, and, you know, that's kind of the bigger, you most your big businesses that you see out there in the world are many times a C-Corp. They've got different types of shareholders. There's all kinds of reasons, you know, and that doesn't apply to a whole lot of people, you know, in Columbia County, or, you know, that are small business startups and things like that. But there are some reasons that can make some sense. The
It's the goal of your business to get to that point. You know, if you're growing rapidly, or you think you might be looking for outside investment, or maybe even going public eventually. You know, those are things that might tip the scale in favor of looking at a C corp.
There's the S corp has strict rules as far as who can be shareholders and things like that too. So there's, you know, sometimes you may be disqualifying yourself, you know, from an S corp, which has some, you know, great tax advantages. And, you know, back in school, they always talked about the double taxation of the C corp, you know, and that's, you know, when you take money out of it, you're usually paying it as a dividend, but the C corp will also be taxed, you know, at the corporate tax rates. And we happen to be in a climate now that's a little more favorable to C corps, you know, most are in that 21, I think is what the percentage tax rate is. And so now the double taxation is not so bad for some people, but, you know, S corp is more advantaged in that scenario because it doesn't have, you know, that double taxation in most cases. But yeah, I mean, there's...
So, Nick, is there any particular industry that you work with that may really benefit from using a C-Corp formation?
Yeah, actually, one that we've done quite a bit on is around a lot of the tech world. You know, Silicon Valley world is always what I kind of call it. And there's, you know, a lot of times they're bringing in venture capital. They're wanting to potentially go public. So a lot of those situations, even though they might be smaller right out of the gate, they might still elect, you know, just to start out as a C corporation. So, you know, we've definitely seen some of that. So, but, you know, by and large, when we kind of circle back to a lot of what we cover is, you know, small businesses and local businesses, you know, that conversation between LLC, S corp, you know, sole proprietorship, you know, that's where we spend a lot of our time on. And I think, you know, we go back to, you know, talk to your trusted advisor, you know, get some of that advice, you know, talk through what your goals are, things like that. So, you know, where you're going to be and what structure makes sense for you, you know, and I think that's kind of the best direction to go. So
I agree completely.
So we're wrapping up our final segment here. You know, if you got questions at rightfootbusiness.com, visit us on our website at rightfootbusiness.com. Make sure to get your email address in there so you can get on our mailing list, and we can send you updates and follow our blog posts, and also, you know, just Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, not MySpace, Friendster? No.
If it's still around, maybe GeoCities.
Okay.
Give it a shot.
There we go. And then also, we'd like to thank our guest, Drew Gramson, attorney here. Drew, can you give out your information and get a hold of you locally?
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Nick. You can give me a call locally, 503-666-4567, and I think my information will be in the notes for this episode, so you can find it there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll link all that up and have you in there.
You've been listening to The Right Foot Business with your host, Nick Herleman, CPA.